si è fissa. Da oggi, eh. We shall label by him a surfeit. Lead of G and then parameters.
And the parameter space, which is coincided with the space of complex structures of the Riemann surface, and had the S duality group or groupoid, which coincided with the groupoid relating different ways of decomposing this Riemann surface in a pair of times. Now, I would like today to understand. Okay, I'd like to explain today a certain interesting duality with dimensional conformal field theory, which emerges from this construction. So I wanna, the whole story started by a very simple question. If I consider the partition function on S4 of these theories, is going to be a function of the couplings, ultraviolet couplings. And I would like to know if this partition function is modular invariant. This would be a way to test the conjectures about this duality. Now, in a sense, I also would like to know if this partition function really is a function of the complex structure moduli space of Riemann surface. Because if I compute this partition function from a Lagrangian, it's going to be a function of a bunch of ultraviolet pH couplings, each naively living in an upper half plane. So I'd like to understand how this naive picture gets corrected to produce a function on the actual parameter space of couplings. I could have picked any manifold, but I just needed some manifold which I could do some calculations. And S4 is ideal because I didn't need to do the calculation had been done by somebody else, which is usually a good starting point. So, Bestun. told us how to compute the correlation function of gauge, of N equal to gauge theories on S4. He uses a localization approach. So if you have a supersymmetric theory in S4, you'll typically have supersymmetries which anticommute to rotations of S4. This partition function is invariant under those supersymmetries. And you can imagine picking one of the supercharges and adding to the Lagrangian a Q exact term. This will not affect the partition function, but might affect the dynamics and simplify it in sufficiently so that the partition function could be computed. So this is the basic idea of localization. In particular, he added a term which throws most of the dynamics on the S4, with the exception of the north and south pole. So he managed to write this partition function. As an integral over the zero modes of a single field in the vector multiples. So essentially, the only zero mode survives is one out of two of the adjoint scalars in the vector multiples. So if I'm studying a theory with SU2, if I'm studying this theory with TGN, this has S 3G minus 3 plus N SU2 gauge groups corresponding to the various cubes of the Riemann surface. And so you get a product of the Coulomb branch of a real Coulomb branch parameter for each of these gauge groups with the van der Monde factor. So this, I mean that if I take the joint fields in each of these as you choose, their eigenvalues to be a minus a. And I'm normal, these alpha variables I'm introducing there are essentially a times the radius of S4. Now, so full result includes a three-level contribution. A one-loop contribution, which does not depend on the cage cuttings. And then some instanton contributions that come from north and south pole of the sphere, where some dynamics survive. These instanton contributions are actually computed by a certain the partition function which captures the instanton contribution to the S4 calculation coincides with a partition function that had been defined some time ago by Nekrasov in order to do instanton calculations in R4. So it's a very well known and studied object. It depends on two deformation parameters, which here are both taken to be equal to 1 over the radius. So there's a contribution from the north pole involving holomorphic instantons, and a contribution from the south pole, sorry, the three level, depend on both kink bar, and a contribution from the south pole, which only received anti-instanton contributions. The parameters qi are the instanton factors e to the I pi tau I, where the tau i's are the gauge cuttings, complexified gauge cuttings for all these gauge groups. For the sake of clarity, I will use the symbol alpha I to denote both these Coulomb branch parameters when I runs from 1 to 3g minus 3 plus n. And then I will denote also as alpha I, but I runs from running from 3g minus 3 plus n plus 1 to 3g minus 3 plus 2n to denote the mass parameters for the theory. Remember, this theory has an SU2 flavor symmetry for each of the punctures with a corresponding mass parameter M. And these mass parameters are morally the same thing as these Coulomb branch expectation values, in the sense that if you gauge the flavor symmetry, the mass parameter is identified with the expectation value of the scalar field corresponding to the gauge symmetry. So they appear in a completely parallel way in the calculation. So it's actually, so the three-level contribution is very simple. It's essentially just the gauge, the action for this for the scalar field A. Sorry, not gauge, the action. It's like a potential term for that. In any way, very roughly, you can write it as q to the alpha I, the product of q to the alpha I squared, qi to the alpha I squared, and q bar I to the alpha I squared. I'm going to be rather cavalier with factors of two here. So I warn in advance. You can get the correct formula from the paper. Z1 loop is just the one loop determinant from the hypermultiplets and from the vector multiplets on S4. It receives There are several cancellations because these are BPS multiples between fermions and bosons. Overall, you're left with a certain infinite product. From the vector multiplets, which essentially comes from the W bosons, mostly, which have mass 12i, divided by another product involving the hypermultiplets. So the vector multiplets are, you know, come from the tubes of the Riemann surface. The hypermultiplets are associated to the pair of pants, to the trinions of the Riemann surface. So here there's a product of I from 1 to 3G minus 3 plus N. Sorry, this is probably illegible. And then there is a product on the trinions. So remember that from the point of view, this so set each group of pent is described correspond to a block of hypermultiples in the formational theory. These hypermultiples have essentially the Lagrangian from these hypermultiples depend on the Coulomb branch parameters or mass parameters at the three punctures of the trinion. So you get a one-loop factor which depends on I alpha I, j, and k, where I, j, and k are the labels of the trinion. I don't know how to write it exactly. So each of the trinions is labeled by, is associated to three legs. Finally, there is the inst. This is a sum over instanton sectors. Each instanton sector is weighed by the instanton action, product of qi to the ni, where ni is the number of instantons in each for each cage group. And then you get the result of an integral of the moduli space of instantons with these instanton numbers. This is a complicated rational function of the alpha i's, of the alphas. Okay? This rational function itself, is known only for a certain subclass of theories in the class, which are spheres with a certain number of points, which you decompose into a pair of points decomposition of this sort, or tori with a certain number of points, which you decompose in a pair of points decomposition of this sort. Okay, so these are the two classes of examples of which this partition function is actually known, and it's a sum over over pairs of Young tableaus with ni boxes each. So there are 3g minus 3 plus n pairs of Young tableaus, each with ni boxes. And so you're summing a huge number of relatively simple rational functions into an overall object. I don't think there is any use writing any of these down today, because as long as these numbers go beyond one, it would take whole blackboards. But you know, right? I should explain it a little bit better. So what people know how to compute are the instant partition functions for products of U2 gauge groups or UN gauge groups with fundamental or bifundamental matter. What we want are products of SU2 gauge groups. That's already a little bit of a problem. So it means that what you compute, if you compute this partition function with the product that you choose, you have some spurious factors that come from the U1s. But so you had to get rid of those. And anyway, so that the basic idea is, so you use the ADHM construction to describe these instanton modelized spaces. And you do a localization. And you end up with the sum over Yantar laws. I don't have a direct physical understanding why would you get a sum over three Yantar laws. Because of U2. Because of U2. Yeah. That's right. If it was U3, you had n tableaus for each of the gauge groups. And each of the n tableaus would have n little n i boxes, which is the number of instantons in your in the term you're studying. No, you sum all possible Yantar laws. All possible pairs of Yantar laws. Sum of them for the sum at zero. And actually, what's worse is that when you look at the sum, the properties for the individual rational functions in the sum are not a good predictor of the properties of the final rational function, which is something that made me lose a couple of weeks of time, because the first time I looked at these sums, they didn't have the correct properties that I needed for the duality. They seem to have many more zeros, many more poles. And then a lot of the poles actually cancel out. So you get the feeling that this is not a very economical description of these rational functions. But at least it's a way to compute. I didn't. It's not 1/2. Sorry, 1/r.
Sorry. But why did you choose them to be?
I didn't. The student did the calculation, and his result was that you get 1/r.
If you choose epsilon 1 not equal to epsilon 2,
then it's not
S4. It's not
S4.
Okay.
So, it's actually useful to group the holomorphic factors in the Z level together with the Z instanton. And rewrite this expression as some measure which depends on the alpha i's only, and then some functions, one of which depends on alpha I and holomorphically on the q's, another function which depends on the alpha i's and anti-homomorphic in the Q's. Okay. This function will depend on the specific Riemann surface, will also depend on the specific pair of Planck decomposition. Sorry. For the Riemann surface. So I could just label it by this sort of diagrams that encode the profile decomposition. And, what do we need to be true to have S quality? So, first of all, you need to match the parameters, understand how S quality would act on this cube. But this is actually doable for this theory, because the main application of Nekrasov partition function was to prove Saber-Witten theory, was to prove that you could reproduce the Saber-Witten curve from an explicit instant calculation. So this allows you to match the parameters in this partition function pretty neatly with the parameters in the Saber-Witten curve. In particular, for the four-puncture sphere, which is a very nice example, remember, the Saber-Witten curve was a double cover of this four-puncture sphere, which labels the theory.
And the function of this four-function sphere will have theorem Q1 infinity. So Q is the position of this point. Indeed, this sum is supposed to be convergent if that's the value of the QIs are smaller than 1. So this is more or less like an algebraic function. It's defined by convergent power series. I found 0. It diverges at 1 because something interesting happens at 3 at 1. But yes, we are getting to an S2O picture. And then, so you should be able, in principle, to understand what happens near the singularity. And then, presumably, there is another singularity all the way to infinity in the third region in modular space, in the third cusp of modular space, in parameter space. So we want to understand if there is any obvious relation between f of alpha q for this diagram. Okay. And the same function at 1 minus q. With the slightly different labeling of the alphas. Well, so I should have written better. Let's do it. So here I have some masses, some parameter, gauge coupling, but some Coulomb parameter in the internal leg, and then the masses, alpha 2, alpha 3, alpha 4, alpha 5, and here, after I apply a duality, the mass parameters get redistributed. And I get some sort of a dual Coulomb parameter. So let me write this f of alpha and f of alpha tilde. Well, understanding the relation between this alpha 1 and alpha tilde 1 is part of the problem. So somehow there should be some relation between the function at q, f1 minus q. This relation should leave this whole integral invariant upon relabeling of the or these external legs you're not integrating for. And the correspondence should somehow affect or relate these two labels, alpha 1 and alpha 1 tilde. Now, for a while we thought it was really just literally a relation, that this could be written almost as an equality upon an appropriate identification of alpha 1 and alpha tilde 1. The reason for this confusion, reason for this idea, was that if you take this function f, let me just really write it as a function of r, a, and set r to infinity, you can use this result of the connecting the Necker's partition function to the subgraphic curve. And we write this as e to the r squared f0 plus f1 plus r to the minus 2 f2 plus dot dot dot. And these functions behave pretty well under q goes to 1 minus q or q goes to 1 over q. They're not quite modular, but they're quasi modular.
Can I see the question?
Mm-hmm.
Cos cube to minus 1 over cube. As to let interchange 1 and 0 for q, but tau goes to minus 1 over tau is not the same as q goes to 1.
It is. That's why it is not tau goes to minus 1 over tau. Well, it depends. This is tau cavalli. In the case of SHU n f equal to 4, you can write a sort of an infrared tau defined as q equal to theta 2 to the 4 tau ir over theta 3 to the 4 tau ir. Okay? Then if you do a SHU z transformation on tau ir, you will get q to 1 minus q. Or q to 1 over q. Because remember, S exchanges theta 2 and theta 3. I don't remember, this expression maybe for some difference for powers of theta function. Sorry, I don't trust this expression 100%. I think it's more or less correct, at least in spirit. If you do tau to 1 over tau, you permute the theta functions. If you do tau to tau plus 1, tau 2 goes to, tau 3 goes to tau 4, and tau 4 to the 4 can be written everything in terms of tau 2 to the 4 and tau 3 to the 4 with a Riemann
structure. That's fine.
But you said before in one of your lectures that there is no notion of the duality in infrared. I was asking
that's true.
Now you're saying,
no,
let's say,
this is safe. No, I mean, a situation equal to 4 is very special because there's a single Coulombian parameter. Okay. If you turn off all the masses, the Coulombian parameter is dimensionful, and it cannot affect the infrared topic.
No, I understand the formula.
So there is a well-defined infrared topic for a situation equal to 4 with zero masses. This is the value. And as duality will act on that. But it's really an exceptional case. Typically, you wouldn't be able to say that this duality acts on infrared coupling, because infrared coupling depends on the U parameters, and there is no canonical relation between the U parameters. But if it's independent of the U parameters. So this was a source of confusion for a few years after Wittgenstein. But Nekrasov's calculation made quite clear that this is tau ultraviolet is not the same as tau infrared in a reasonable normalization scheme. Anyway, so. But anyway, this appeared to be a red herring. So at Dona Italy, it looked like upon some simple identification between A and A tilde, these functions upstairs could be almost modular, but the first few ones. Their transformation rule becomes more and more complicated the farther you go. And you really get the feeling this overall function does not transform as a function, that's duality. But there is a certain resemblance with formal and maybe practical resemblance between and then q to the level of these descendants. Okay. Really, I mean, I should have written descendant holomorphic and anti-holomorphic descendants. And you have an independent matrix for the holomorphic and anti-holomorphic ones. Sorry. Okay. Now, the idea is that although the sum of the primaries strongly depends on your theory, the frequent functions depend on your theory, but the sum of the descendants to and then another object that comes from the sum of anti-holomorphic descendants. Okay. Now, for a rational field theory, to find a number of primaries, this would be a sum. But for a general field theory, this is an integral. There is a particularly simple non-rational theory, which is the real theory, which has one single primary for its value of conformal dimension. In that case, I can replace the sum over the primaries with an integral of the conformal dimensions. Or actually, if I parameterize the conformal dimensions, it's actually better to use a label, the Liouville momentum, which lives on the real axis. And then the corresponding dimension is alpha, is q squared over 4 plus alpha squared, where q is b plus 1 over b. And the central charge of this theory is 1 plus 6 q squared. Yes. Okay. So I need more chalk.
I know how to conformal blocks transform under S duality, well, under cross symmetry. Indeed, this correlation function should be unchanged if I decide to cut my theory, my sphere, the other way. Particularly, this imposes some constraints on the, on some very strong constraints on the way these conform blocks transform. Indeed, a property of these conformal blocks is that they are solutions of Virasoro world identities.
Again, say a little bit better what I mean, but in a sense, these forms, if you keep the outside labels, external labels fixed, but you vary I, validate the I, you're sort of getting a basis of all possible solutions of Virasoro world identities. And so these conform blocks only depend on the data of this, or the conform dimensions on the bound, on the outside punctures, and on the conformal dimension of the of this label. Still, they're propagating, and there is a relation that tells you that. If you take this conformal block, it's a function of Q. So this again, this is defined here as a power sphere in Q, which has finite degrees of convergence 1. But you can imagine an analytical continuous function beyond that radius of convergence, and asking how does it behave around Q equal to 1. So the answer is that this is indeed related to the conformal block. At for 1 minus q. But it's related by a certain integral kernel. So the conformal blocks. Sorry?
Yeah,
thank you. The conform blocks satisfy a sort of wave function properties under a duality, which I would like to see from the Nekrasov partition function. So how does a conform block actually look like? Well, as I said, so you start with this different function. First, you insert the primary field. This gives you 1. Then you insert the first descendant. And this, if I remember correctly, gives you something like, so this correlation function, so, and then you need to divide it by the matrix of inner products to normalize it properly. And if I remember correctly, this gives you something like delta 1 plus delta 2 minus delta, delta 3 minus delta plus delta 4 minus delta, and then you divide by these, which is 2 delta. Okay? So at each step, the conformal block, the calculation will produce a certain rational function for the conformal dimensions, central charge of your theory. So your conformal block would be a sum of q to the n times some rational function of your delta, delta I, and actually phi. Yeah. Okay? Now, by inspection, you can ask if these rational functions have anything to do with these rational functions in the case of the four-factor sphere. And then repeat the exercise for the five-factor sphere, six-factor sphere, and so on. It's the same. At first sight, it doesn't quite work because you have the extra poles there. But then you discover those poles cancel out. Then again, it starts working out, but not quite. And that's because the calculation here was done with U2 and you need to subtract off the U1 factor. But at the end, you get them to match. So you can write a nice mathematical notebook which computes the rational functions on the left and on the right, up to whatever level you want. And level by level, they match. So this, of course, is kind of an experimental proof. Recently, Fatiev gave an actual proof that these objects were the same for the four-factor sphere. You can also check that they are the same for experimentally for many punctures on the sphere or for many punctures on the torus. As I was saying, we lack a way to compute the necklace of partition function for when you have trifundamentals gauged. It's really just a technical problem. Nobody has spent time to do it, but probably. There is some messy determinant to compute to determine the measure of integration on the instant moduli space. So it's not in principle. There should not be problems doing the calculation. So surely there will be some subtleties in the sense that for the four-factor sphere, there was a very natural way to parameterize the moduli space. These four factors are the level factors for hypermultiplex. You recognize the fact that if you have an hypermultiplex in a tri-fundamental of trees you choose, its masses, if I give masses to these trees you choose, I mean, its charges under the trees you choose will be plus 1, plus 1, plus 1, plus 1, plus 1, minus 1, plus 1, minus 1, plus 1, minus 1, plus 1, plus 1, and their complex conjugate and their antiparticles. So these four particles plus their antiparticles give correspond to these four factors in the denominator. Crossing symmetry. So we got to prove that the partition function on S4 indeed has all the S dualities of the which we expected. And in a sense, I think we also learned how this complicated Fuller branch, how the complicated parameter space of TGN is assembled out of the parameter space of Fisher Lagrangian description. The correlation function, the partition function had instanton corrections, which are an expansion of the QIs. The QIs are smaller than one of the naive physical region of the upper plane, if QI is e to the I pi tau I. But somehow this function nothing singular happened at the boundaries of the upper plane. The function could be continued beyond, and the analytic continuation was global. Would give you the partition function of a different Lagrangian description of the theory.
And would overlap. So in a sense, this is one upper half plane. Well, kind of. And this is another upper half plane.
Right, I didn't say almost anything about Nekrasov partition function at the epsilons. So to compute the partition function that you're in R4, an instant partition function that you're in R4, Nekrasov needed to localize, again, the problem. So he had a very special deformation of the Lagrangian, which will do the job. The deformation was parametrized by an isometry of R4, a rotational isometry of R4. Was a combination of a rotation in two planes, side of four. Epsilon 1 and epsilon 2 are sort of the amount of rotation done
but
in these two planes.
But the partition function should not depend on this.
Oh, no, it does.
What it corresponds to in the.
It's a deformation of the Lagrangian.
Then n equal to 2 theory.
Well, you need to turn off the epsilons. So you see, remember the record of expansion. R is roughly square root of epsilon 1, epsilon 2, 1 over square root of epsilon 1, epsilon 2. So if you turn off the epsilons, the partition function you are computing has an e to the 1 over epsilon squared f naught, and that f naught is the potential of the partial pitch theory. The sublinear terms are
can be interpreted as gravitational couplings, but they're less.
So the pure undeformed n equal to 2 corresponds to epsilon equal to 0.
That's right.
Equal to infinity.
Yes, on R4. On S4 instead, you get finite epsilons for the pure undeformed HD on S4.
So
there was no epsilon deformation on S4, but somehow the combinatorics of the localization on S4 produced the same calculation that we get out of the forming R4. No. The direction of the Coulomb branch is more likely to be momentum.
It will be momentum. And but it's pure. There is a real world.
Which corresponds to the wild strike. So if there is a wild of action, there is a wild of in bargains. Now A and minus A. And yeah. A minus A give you the same expectation value. I mean, they're conjugated by, they're related by Weierstrass reflection. And this corresponds to the reflection of the living world and the fact that alpha minus alpha are the same state. And this becomes even more evident when you generalize these results to total theories. So here I was discussing a few Jewish theories, and they correspond to the living theory. You can also argue that if you repeat the
supersymmetric,
the calculation for the
supersymmetric cube, just
no, just a cube. Cube was only a cube.
And it is trying to remember quite apart from changing Q, it has multiple deformations from black hole.
No, I don't think so.
To be black hole, yeah.
I think it was an infantry view, but I think it's wrong. Maybe I remember wrong.
I think that it still is compact. Have a winding.
One more compact.
Okay. Well, so there are another couple of things I want to say before I let you go. So Festoon regional calculation was not, I mean, the focus of the calculation was not to compute just the Christian function in S4. Rather, we want to compute the expectation value of Wilson loops wrapping a circle inside S4. And the result of the, if you add a Wilson loop to the calculation over here, well, I guess I can just write it. What you just do is you add the character in the corresponding representation. Okay? So, for example, for S2, you would add something like e to the I. There are some pi's, but I cannot remember now. E to the I pi alpha. That's e to the minus I pi alpha. So, you're perfectly free to do the same here. So you get the expectation values from Wilson loops in your inequality theory. Now you can subject this to S2 alpha. And you're expected to get the position functions of the S2 of the Wilson loop, which for any full square means was a 2. And you don't have to know what it is for inequality theory. It's theories. So, And now you get to match them with an object in the field which leads to the point, which is the generic field for the view. So, see. And you can generalize this to the larger class of theories which involve SUN gauge loops instead of SU2 gauge loops. And this will match pretty neatly to the properties of correlation functions with TODA theories. TODA theories are a generalization of your view. So labeled theory essentially is given by measurement, scale by measurement in tensor for a scalar with an anomaly, and by adding to the Lagrangian a cosmological constant curve. To the TODA, you take scalars which live in the algebra of some group. You give them an anomaly, which looks like something like B whole plus 1 over B check. And these are the wild vector, the dual wild vector. And then you add a whole bunch of UV walls, UV light walls. corresponding to the roots, the positive roots, the simple roots. For the simple roots of the root. So it's not for generalization of real theory and shares a lot of properties with real theory. Of the phi plus extra terms to generalize the expression, it will give you some high spin currents. So no, the conformal blocks that are involved in the TODA theory are some of the extension from W. So the things that people don't know how to compute are exactly the function of S4 of the theories which had no Lagrangian, like in 60. It was a bit of a disappointment, but at least one can hope that if you put together the insights from CFT and the insights from the four-dimensional description, you might be able to produce sooner or later these correlation functions.
So first I'm putting a difference to the CFT that is not UV log to that.
Uh-huh.
We have some field four-dimensional input to two.
Like sinus graph
dispersion. Well, so Nekrasov partition function is a deformation where you treat the, which is in a sense instead of looking at four dimensional gauge theories, you think about five dimensional gauge theories on a circle. Sort of a, yeah, it's a strange deformation where the rational functions become trigonometric functions. And people have shown recently that in simple cases, you still get some sort of Virasoro on the identities in there. But it's also some sort of deformed Virasoro on the identities. There is a deformed Virasoro algebra part.
Do you suggest that you can identify the classes of n equal to 2 theories?
No, maybe the same n equal to 2 theories, but if you compute the necker subtraction function with the deformation might describe some deformation of the U theory, which is not conformal to Zuno because it doesn't have Virozo anymore, but might be still interesting. Like such goal is not conformal.
Maybe
confused. Partition function, this four manifold of this theory, which is a holomorphic quantity, and I think can be identified with the partition function on the Riemann surface of a 0,2 CFT, half twisted, so that you get an holomorphic quantity. Finally, Rastelli and some students computed the superconformal index of these theories, which roughly is a partition function that's 3 times S1 with some twists in S1. And that gave them a correlation function of the three-dimensional TFP. Yeah, so it was some topology of the theory. So it only depends on the topology of the Riemann surface, not on the structure. But it still has to satisfy the sort of associativity requirements. And it turned out that the associativity requirements for these theories were some very intricate elliptic gamma integrals. Not much about them, we only know that they're very complicated, but they're subject of current research, and funnily enough, the formula that they needed to be proved a few weeks before by some mathematicians. So we could show that this was indeed a self-consistent TFT. Again, this work for SU2, the hyper rank seems to be more challenging.
How people worked out now this localization for truth separator? I remember it wasn't quite done.
Well, for like a force per mil, it was.
I mean, honest localization.
Honest localization.
You have to deal with modular space in presence of the Dirac monopole. So, have they done it properly?
So
The UV theory is
obviously. The UV theory was a photo six dimensional theory on the Riemann surface. As a floater in fact, you get a photo dimensional.
This is not what we started in. This is not the situation we started with in the earlier lectures.
Yes, it is. The other lectures we discussed in theories which are, could be engineered by the six dimensional theory on the Riemann surface by flow into the infrared.
But we started with a new big theory that was just a product of.
Yes, yes, and at some point we argued that it was possible to, if you consider the theory of the Riemann. Patterns on the Riemann surface, the result in the infrared does not depend on the metric on the Riemann surface. And so if you play around with the metric enough, you can have a flow that passes very close to the four-dimensional UV theory and then goes down to the where you want to go. Or maybe we just stop there because we want to discuss four-dimensional CFTs. Okay. So anyway, you want in theory geometries which have the same symmetries as the four-dimensional n equals 2. These theories in particular have a U1 arc, an SHR. So these M6 should actually have an S1 and S2 inside. It's going to be sometimes it's 2 over some base 3 manifold. And Rastena and Lin wrote down the ansatz of such metric and reduced the ansatz to solve a single differential equation, which, funny enough, is also called a TODA equation. It's a 3-dimensional TODA equation. And it's not a coincidence, probably. I think this is the equation, if I'm not wrong. Yeah. This is a nice equation. It has conformal symmetry in the plane. So I have three directions, C,